sermon about one of those saints in our religious past. Some years ago, on a retreat with a group of Unitarian Universalist ministers, I brought my telescope to Bodega Bay, California, where we were gathering. We had a clear night, so I trained my telescope on Jupiter. None of my colleagues had ever seen the moons of Jupiter before, and I enjoyed introducing them to the phenomenon that Galileo saw for the first time in 1810, the phenomenon that changed his view of the universe. Just as Galileo did over 400 years ago, we saw the four visible moons change position over the two nights that we were there. The moons were obviously orbiting Jupiter and not orbiting Earth, as everything was supposed to do in Galileo's time, according to the Roman Catholic Church. Galileo's discovery supported the idea that the Earth is not the center of the universe, and he began teaching and writing that the Earth and all the planets went around the sun, as Copernicus had actually theorized years before. Galileo tried to prove to some of his scientific colleagues that there were bodies which did not go around the Earth, at the very least, but around a planet. He invited them to look at Jupiter through his telescope. "There," he said, "see for yourself." But some of the colleagues actually refused to look. They were so convinced of the old world view that they refused to be bothered with the facts. Galileo was warned by the church that his teaching was heresy. The word heresy literally meaning hair splitting. Heresy. Eventually, as you know, as an old man, Galileo was forced by the Inquisition to recant and was put under house arrest by the church, where he stayed until his death 8 years later. 80 years before Galileo, another much younger man found himself imprisoned, this time by the Protestant church, under the Reformation leader John Calvin. Unlike Galileo, he refused to recant his heresy. His name was Michael Servetus, or to give him his Spanish name, Miguel Serveto. So today I want to speak a little about the life and the work of Michael Servetus, an important forerunner of Unitarianism. At this time of the year, when spooky costumes begin to come out of stores and out of our closets, here is a story of a for real witch hunt. Miguel Serveto was born into a noble family in the village of Villanueva de Siena in Spain in 1511. So he was 5 years old when the monk Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses against the practices of the Roman Church to the church door in Wittenberg, Germany, the act that launched the revolt that had been brewing against the Roman Catholic Church. By the time Servetus was a teen, the Protestant Reformation was well underway. Unlike the rest of Europe, in Spain, Jews, Muslims, and Christians lived together for centuries in relative harmony under the Islamic Moors. But just a few years before Servetus was born, the Moors were overthrown by Ferdinand and Isabella. Followers of Islam and Jews were allowed to remain in Spain only if they would agree to be baptized as Christians. Many of them, the conversos, agreed to be baptized, but some, especially the Jews, retained their traditions and their practices. Then, when the Inquisition under Ferdinand and Isabella became more active and fiercely extreme in squelching dissent, Jews and Muslims were required to profess faith in the Christian doctrine of the Trinity or be burned at the stake for heresy. It was this doctrine of the Trinity that has been most objectionable to Muslims and Jews because it elevates Jesus to equal status with God. For Jews and Muslims, there can be no greater than the one God, Yahweh, or Allah, who created all. And there is no form, no idol, and certainly not the form of a human being that can or should represent God. In contrast, the Christian Trinitarian doctrine insists that Jesus is also God, that he is somehow one of three persons of the one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It was this doctrine that I had the most trouble with as a young Catholic. I could never see how the one God I learned about could be at the same time three persons. The nuns at the time tried to quiet my doubts by saying, "It's a mystery. It's something we should not question." But this was never very satisfying to me. Growing up, Michael Servetus saw that to question the Trinity could cost converted Jews and Muslims their lives. Some Spanish scholars have suggested that Servetus' own family may have included some Jewish converts to Christianity, or at least that he knew some of these conversos well. What is clear is that the young Servetus was very familiar with Jewish customs and traditions. Servetus was a very bright and promising young man with an active, scientifically inclined mind. His family sent him to Toulouse in France, where he studied law, philosophy, science, and literature. By age 19, he could write and speak Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, and he began studying the Bible enthusiastically. It must have been quite startling for Servetus to realize that there is absolutely no mention of the Trinity in the Bible. The word Trinity is not there. I can imagine his young, active mind wondering how the church could possibly justify burning Jews and Muslims for not accepting a doctrine that was not even in the scriptures. Servetus was bright, but politically quite naive. He was also proud and very impulsive. Once he decided that the Trinity was a false doctrine, a fabrication of the church, he was sure that the Protestant leaders, at least, would agree with him. So he left Catholic Spain for Protestant Germany. At age 20, he wrote a very intemperate attack on the doctrine of the Trinity, titled simply, "On the Errors of the Trinity." The publisher dared not put his name on the book, but Servetus did so proudly. In the book, Servetus lampoons the Trinity, mimicking the church's convoluted explanation of it. And Glenn is the voice of Servetus for us this morning.
There are three wonderful dispositions of God, in each of which his divinity shines forth. And from this, you might very well understand a Trinity. For the Father is the whole substance and the one God from whom these degrees and personifications proceed. And they are three, not by virtue of some distinction of being in God, but through an oikonomia, or disposition, of God in various forms of deity. For the same divinity which is in the Father is communicated to the Son, Jesus Christ, and to our spirits, which are the temples of the living God. For the Son and our sanctified spirits are sharers with us in the substance of the Father. Are its members pledges and instruments, although the kind of deity in them is varying? And this is why they are called distinct persons, that is, manifold aspects, diverse forms, and kinds of deity.
So then, having tried to explain the church's position, Servetus blasts the Trinity as an irrational and embarrassing doctrine.
How much this tradition of the Trinity has, alas, been a laughingstock to the Mohammedans, and God knows. The Jews also shrink from giving adherence to this fancy of ours and laugh at our foolishness about the Trinity. And on account of its blasphemies, they do not believe that this is the Messiah who was promised in their law. And not only Mohammedans and Hebrews, but the very beasts of the field would make fun of us as they grasp our fantastical notion, for all the works of the Lord bless the one God.
You can see he did not mince words. For speaking out, Servetus was branded a dangerous heretic, and he finally realized that he was in trouble. So he fled to France, and for the next 10 years he lay low, assuming various pseudonyms, devoting himself to book editing and printing, and to the study of medicine, mathematics, astronomy, astrology, and geography. He published a volume on home medicines, edited a well-received translation of the Bible, updated Ptolemy's geography, and became an honored physician in Vienne, France, where he worked tirelessly saving lives during an epidemic there. He is the first to have discovered how the pulmonary and circulatory system works in the body. This discovery was buried for years, since it was just an incidental comment in one of his theological works. Servetus was a true Renaissance man, and although he is dear to religious liberals as a voice for freedom and reason in religion, he is honored in other venues for his non-theological accomplishments. There is a statue of him at the medical school of the University of Zaragoza, Spain, and a school in Vienne, France is named for him, as well as a boulevard. I have posted on the bulletin board by the water fountain. If you lean in too close, you'll get wet. I did that already. But if you'd like to take a look after the service during coffee hour to see some of the images honoring Michael Servetus from various ages and in various places in Europe. Since the death of Franco in 1975, Servetus has actually become more popular in Spain. That year, the Instituto de Estudios Sillenses Miguel Serveto was founded in the village of his birth. This is an institute for the study of Servetus's work, which is comprised of mostly Spanish scholars, medical and legal professors, journalists, philosophers, and educators. Several years after this institute was founded, a Unitarian Universalist minister, Don McKinney, visited it, and I was surprised to learn that McKinney's was the first theologically inspired visit. It seems that among the Spanish scholars, Servet's theological work is of minor importance, but it is of great importance to us here today and to Unitarians worldwide. We are his theological descendants. In my narrative, I left Servetus living in France under a pseudonym and accomplishing much of what he became known for. I now return briefly to the rest of the story. In 1541, Servetus began corresponding with Protestant leader John Calvin, who ruled over a strict religious oligarchy in Geneva. No deviation from Calvin's theology was tolerated in Geneva or throughout Switzerland. Servetus, in his letters, politely asked Calvin some theological questions, but in his arrogance, he was really seeking to win Calvin to his point of view. That was futile and was a big mistake. Calvin at first answered politely, but then he became enraged at Servetus' bold heresies, and he wrote to an acquaintance, "If Servetus ever comes to Switzerland, upon my authority, he will not leave it alive." In 1552, Servetus published 1,000 copies of his major theological work, which is called Restoration of the Christian Religion, which was an answer to Calvin's major work, Institutes of the Christian Religion. In his refutation, Servetus said that the Protestant reformers did not go far enough because they left doctrines like the Trinity intact. He proposed a different Christianity, one free of doctrines, with Jesus as a model for Christian behavior. Along with the Anabaptists, he rejected infant baptism, believing that people should only be baptized when they are old enough to consent and understand. He said that God, who is incomprehensible and transcends all things, and who is inside of us — that was a heresy in itself back then — God must be felt rather than discussed. In the doctrine of the Trinity, Servetus found much to confuse his head, much for the theologians to puzzle about and split hairs over, but nothing to warm or inspire him. He kept clinging to the hope that some reformer would be open to his ideas. Now the plot thickens as a pair of cousins enter the scene. Guillaume de Tri, an ex-Catholic friend of Calvin who fled to Geneva, and his Catholic cousin, Antoine Arny, who lived in France. At Calvin's instigation, the cousins had an argument through letters on whose religion was better, the Catholic or Protestant, as measured by whose persecuted heretics better. In one letter, de Tri wrote, "You Catholics have a heretic living there in France right under your noses, Michael Servetus, who goes under the name of Miguel de Villeneuve, and you don't even punish him." Arny didn't believe his cousin, so he had a Catholic inquisitor visit Servetus' home. The inquisitor found no evidence, so for proof, de Tri got the letters that Servetus had written to Calvin years before, as well as Calvin's copy of Servetus' incriminating book, and he sent them to his Catholic cousin. When the Catholic inquisitors got hold of these, Servetus was seized and put through 3 days of interrogation. But with the help of friends, he escaped the Lyon jail on the third night. The trial, however, proceeded without him for 10 weeks. The sentence was death by slow fire, along with all the copies of his book as could be found. Since he had fled, he was burned in effigy on the appointed date. And the book burning must have created quite a flame. Only 3 copies of the original exist today. This book that I have is called Out of the Flames, and this is an accounting by two authors who are rare book enthusiasts. And they put this one out, telling the story of Servetus, and especially the story of what happened to his books, and tracing where the 3 extant books are today. It's a very interesting read. Servetus tried to lay low, Now, both the Catholics and the Protestants were after him. In a few months, he turned up in Geneva in disguise and tried to get a boat to Zurich to eventually go south to Naples, where he understood that there was a community of Spaniards ready to welcome him. But unfortunately, he got to Geneva on a Saturday and had to stay overnight. There were no boats for hire. In Geneva on a Sunday, everyone was required to go to church. So Servetus went. He went in disguise. But as luck would have it, he happened to pick a church that Calvin was speaking in. Servetus was recognized. He was immediately arrested, thrown in prison, and put on trial for heresy. He was denied counsel and even a clean cell. His letters pleading for better treatment fell on deaf ears.
A letter from the Geneva prison dated September 15th, 1553. Honorable council members, I humbly beg that you cut short these long delays and deliver me from prosecution. You see that Calvin is at the end of his rope, not knowing what to say, and for his pleasure wishes to make me rot in prison. The lice eat me alive. My clothes are torn, and I have nothing for a change, neither jacket nor shirt, but a bad one. My lords, I have also asked you to give me an advocate, as you did my opponent, who was not in the same straits as I, who am stranger and ignorant of the customs of this country. Written in your prisons of Geneva, signed Michael Servetus. A letter from the Geneva prison dated October 10th, 1553. Council members, honored sirs, it is now 3 weeks that I have sought an audience and have been unable to secure one. I beg you, for the love of Jesus Christ, not to refuse me what you would not refuse a Turk who sought justice at your hands. I have some important and necessary matters to communicate to you. As for what you commanded, that something be done to keep me clean, nothing has been done, and I am in worse state than before. The cold distresses me. Because of my colic and rupture, causing other complaints which I should be ashamed to describe. It is a great cruelty that I have not permission to speak, if only to remedy my necessities. For the love of God, honored sirs, give your order, whether for pity or duty. Written in your prisons of Geneva, signed Michael Servetus.
During the 9-week trial, Calvin whipped up negative sentiment against Servetus in the outlying areas, and all but one clergyman called for his execution. That one brave soul had to flee later for his own life. The verdict against Servetus, death by slow fire, was no surprise to anyone except perhaps Servetus himself, who seemed to believe that the more liberal voices on the Genevan Council would save him. Servetus was hounded to renounce his heresies, but he refused to do so, and so on October 27th, 1553, at age 42, he was walked to the stake. As he trudged to meet his fate, he cried out, "O Jesus, Son of the eternal God, have mercy on me." The minister attending him tried to get him to alter his prayer. Instead of "Jesus, Son of the eternal God," they wanted him to recant his heresy and say, "Jesus, eternal Son of God, have mercy on me." But he did not recant. He was tied to the stake and the fire was kindled. As the flames engulfed him, again he cried out, "Jesus, Son of the Eternal God, have mercy on me. After he died, legend has it that Calvin commented, if only he had prayed to Jesus as Eternal Son of God, rather than Son of the Eternal God, I could have cut him down and set him free. The different placement of an adjective made that much of a difference to the hair-splitting theologians of the day. In the aftermath of this cruel execution, there was an outcry against Calvin's cruelty. As is often the case with martyrs, the outcome was the opposite of what the forces of repression hoped. Calvin was hounded and forced to defend his action. He complained, "The dogs are barking at me from all sides." Not only was there a movement set in motion toward greater religious freedom, but in some liberal circles, there suddenly was a great demand for Servetus's books and theological tracts, and copies were secretly made and distributed. Servetus was not a Unitarian in the full sense of what that term eventually came to mean. He did not believe that Jesus was only human, but that Jesus was a divine being created by and therefore lesser than God. But his theological writings stimulated others to reconsider accepted doctrines like the Trinity. One small group of Italian liberals, inspired by Servetus, decided that the Trinity was an erroneous doctrine. In fear for their lives, they fled to Geneva, where they had started to meet. At first, they were there in Geneva with Calvin's blessing, until Calvin learned that they were studying heresy. They escaped then to Poland and to Transylvania, and in the more tolerant atmosphere of Eastern Europe, they were able to establish Unitarian churches. The churches in Poland were destroyed after 100 years by the fervor of the Inquisition, but the Transylvanian Unitarian churches that they helped to found exist to this day, as many of you know. And we here today are the living heirs to the questioning spirit of Michael Servetus and the early Unitarian churches that were set in motion by his writings. It is amazing to me to contemplate in these times, but even now there are forces at work that are reminiscent of the repressions of Servetus's day. In this country, right-wing extremists burn piles of books they find offensive. They turn their backs on modern science in their biblical literalism. And they attack the Bill of Rights that guarantees all of us the right to disagree on religious questions. They remind me of the colleagues of Galileo, who, when given the opportunity to see the moons of Jupiter for themselves, shut their eyes instead and pronounced it impossible. So may we today be vigilant always in protecting the hard-won freedoms that we now enjoy. And may we be mindful of the high price that has been paid through the ages by those who laid the foundation for our free faith.